It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HRs, recruiters, and one actor, as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. And once again, we're going to continue this week and talk about performance evaluations. Paul, it's great to have you back again with all your expertise, because today we're going to talk about employee input in performance evaluations. This is where I usually get into big time trouble. So I'm looking forward to some good advice. Jeremy, where are we going to start?
I love the way you start. I love the way you start everything out, and you just, it's so great. This is where I usually get into trouble. It's where I see, that's the thing, is a lot of us don't look forward to these types of things. We're really going to dive deep in today. So the topic is center stage employee input and performance evaluations. I've got two articles to share, and also our other main resource for today is the performance appraisal toolbook, by author Paul Falcone, which is with us today, best-selling author and former CHRO of Nickelodeon, amongst other very cool positions. So there is this one. I'm going to start off with the research as I normally do. So I think we might have talked about this particular reference last time. It's called Performance Appraisal and Performance Management, 100 Years of Progress with a question mark. So one thing, and we're just going to dive right in. We talk about the memory, and this is where I was thinking about employee input. How often do we really remember details of these stories and of things that actually happen? So researchers found that the organization of information and memory could be affected by categories existing in raters' minds prior to observing behavior. Okay, what does that mean? Think we all organize information in our brains, and we do it based on our experiences. And when it comes to performance review time, think about that employee input. Especially if employees are used to having their supervisor kind of railroad them right into, here's what I've seen, I filled out your performance review, sign it. It muddies a little bit it's almost like this kind of obedience type of thing, it feels like sometimes, where they don't feel like they're okay to speak up and provide their input into the storytelling. So I was thinking, if this is the case with the raters, how will memory be affected by the employee and it fails to allow them to provide an accurate picture of their own performance, let alone failed memory? I mean, when you look at psych studies and psych 101 textbook, the accuracy of people who witness crimes, for example, or car accidents, our memories aren't as good as we think they are. And also, if employees aren't used to having input in their performance reviews, and let's say that the managers or organization is trying something new, and they're saying, yeah, we really want employee input, they might not come prepared with any input. And this should be, of course, something that's encouraged throughout the year by managers for employees to take note, track, be mindful of accurate stories and depictions of their performance, kind of like real life job samples. And this would also provide managers with really a much needed excuse to interact with employees. A manager going to an employee and simply saying, hey, even though your performance review isn't for 8 months from now, how have you been tracking, eliciting a more thoughtful response? How have you been tracking your success and the challenges so we can be as accurate as possible and do the best benefit for you regarding your progress in the organization? Which actually makes me think back to that comment I love from Paul last week, make the employee's future about their future. And I think it was Shauna. Shauna's here today. She actually did a LinkedIn post and quoted that, so I'm probably missing a word or two or scrambling it, but make their future actually about their future. So Tom, I'm going to turn it over to you, but I wanted to just bring in that little bit of research on memory, and there's more to share later on.
Well, my last performance review was all about my future. If you don't do this, you won't have one. So not quite sure where that gets us. And speaking up during a performance review for me has been the experience of just say yes. That's the only thing they want to hear. Just confirm what, you know, we've written down, which is why I'm out booked to do some interpersonal skills trainings. So there you go. So it's still a bit of a minefield, Jeremy. And you know, maybe I need just to keep my mouth shut and shake my head up and down when I'm sitting in a performance review. I'm not that personality.
So this leads into, and I love it because we don't sit here and practice and plan for these times, but you always have a great segue into it. So I was thinking, what can the employee do in that regard? There's this other piece of research Tom, you know how I ramble, evaluating the effectiveness of performance management, a 30-year integrative conceptual review. Findings from the article, although a majority of performance management research is focused on reactions of employees, especially the ratees, reactions of managers are also keys to understanding performance management. So here's what I was thinking with that. Yeah, we're talking about employee input here, but what if employees could effectively lead the conversation to a place better than it would normally go? I'm thinking about what you just said, Tom. What if employees were able to ask? So now we're kind of going to Linda Ann's perspective, where employees can take charge and should take charge of their own performance and their own development. Excuse me. So what if employees were able to ask the right questions to their managers and make sure that their managers actually felt comfortable in the process? I'm going to use a parenting analogy here. But first, so employees know that their managers don't really look forward to these either. We get it. So here's this parenting analogy, which are always great when we're talking about organizational settings. As parents, we give feedback to our children, but we ask a lot of questions because we want their input. What would happen if, for example, if a teenager engages in a very thoughtful conversation with a parent and asks good questions, making sure that we felt our input as a parent was welcome and entirely heard and purposefully considered, rather than do this, don't do this, you mess this up, and we're just constantly talking at. What if the teenager, parallel with employee, really engaged us? And what if at the end of the conversation, the parents felt like it was a great adult-to-adult conversation rather than a parent-to-child conversation or parent-to-teenager conversation? What parent would not consider that a huge parenting win at the end of the day? Having this teenager fully engage them, parallel, have an employee fully engage that manager. So if we parallel this to the workplace, what would happen if the manager received that purposeful thought, good questions, et cetera, even thinking and talking from their perspective on behalf of the employee, inviting feedback with a very adult to adult conversation? So that's what I'm thinking based on what you said, Tom. Over to you.
Well, shouldn't then, like, you know, one of my always questions is, when do I get to evaluate my supervisor? But shouldn't maybe this relationship and this evaluation be more about evaluating our connection, our relationship, and how we can improve on that? And wouldn't that actually make both of us better and make both of us better employees?
It would. If you ever have the chance that you participate in a 360 for your boss, that's when you get to provide that feedback. Back to what you said, it is. And that's kind of like the parent teenager. Who's in charge of creating that environment to have those good conversations? Who's in charge? Whose job really is it to create that relationship with the teenager? I would say it's the parent's job, because that's what parenting is. And of course, you know, this philosophical conversation, we would fill in the gaps here. But I mean, we understand kids and teenagers, that's really our job is to do that, you know, environment, purpose, opportunity, and lead those conversations. So that's kind of like, it should be the manager's job. But if they're not doing a good job, there are plenty of teenagers out there who say, I'm not getting what I need from my parents. I don't have the relationship that I want. Let me try to have these purposeful, thoughtful conversations model for them. It happens, and it happens successfully. So employees, I believe, can do the same thing.
Well, I think a lot of my issues started when I suggested to my supervisor that maybe a little less management, a little more leadership. I think that might have been the start of things.
Which it's I'm on sure the communication, Tom. We know it's what you say and when and how you say it.
So how do we have that conversation, you know, with those people who are supervising our time to really sort of open that up and do it in a constructive way, not the way I did it, so that it actually is fruitful?
What I want to do is I'm managing my PDFs here. There's something from Paul's book here is on page 137. I made a note that I wanted to bring up and that Paul respond to this. I see, I love it. We've got all these kinds of hands up. Bear with me. Oh my gosh, I highlighted. Actually, I'm going to do a screen share here. Paul did say I'm free to do the screen share of his book here. And normally I don't highlight this much at a time. All of this just seemed to be very important. So, and I'll read verbatim, and Paul, maybe you can speak to this. I won't read the whole thing, but so in Paul's book, think of it another way, this time as an employee. So we all work 2,080 hours per year, and many of us, for many of us, it's a bare minimum, but only one of those over 2,000 hours is reserved for us. That 1 hour when we get to discuss our own assessment of how we performed over that entire year, that's a lot. So now, and I'm skipping a little bit, ratchet that up. Instead of giving ourselves a gift of 1 hour a year, what about a 300%? When you put it into percentages, it's quite different. Increase by giving ourselves 4 hours. How about we work together with a yardstick we both agreed on how to measure our personal progress and contributions to the company? The two go hand in hand. If I'm adding skills and becoming a stronger player, then my company benefits because of my greater capabilities. I'm making a positive difference at work and I'm keeping up my skills up to date. My responsibilities are fresh and my resume targeted for future growth and stability. And that goes on, but I wanna give Paul an opportunity, if you could, to speak to this a little bit.
I think that was brilliantly written. I don't know who wrote that, but it's really, really well done. No, Jeremy, the parenting parallel is a good one. Because people can relate to that. Even if you don't have kids yourself, you can kind of see it because we were all kids and on the receiving end. But the thought is this, everybody, if management is coming at you, right? It's like this: my boss is the unilateral decision maker and the disciplinarian. You're going to respond a certain way to that. And the way you respond to that is by fear of making a mistake. And there are some managers out there who believe that mistakes should never be made. And if a mistake is made, I need proof that this will never happen again, da 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 da. And the tail is wagging the dog because they manage by error. They manage by mistake. You don't hear any of the good stuff, but make one mistake and they're all over you, right? And in human resources, I've heard that in exit interviews for years across different industries and whatever. It's fairly common out there. And that's my point is, like, change your sponsoring thought about this. This is adult to adult. For just a minute, I don't care who's higher on the corporate totem pole, okay? Yeah, you're higher than the people below you. They're higher than the people below them. But this isn't about hand-holding. And it's not about judgment. It's about observation. There's a big difference. You have the right to observe. You really don't have the right to judge. And where we are right now, as in a lot of organizations, is you really only do this once a year. It is a paper chase. People feel like they're being judged. We opened up talking about how the memory is influenced by the rater's frame of mind or frame of reference. And you can almost remember things in a category that you want to, which is Paul Falcone's not very good. So here's an example of it, but they're not looking at it holistically. They're not remembering the positive things. So make this easier on yourself as a leader. Shift that responsibility for self-evaluation back to the employees. What I as an employee thought was my biggest contribution of the year, you didn't even mention on the annual review. Well, it happened 9 months ago. It doesn't matter. That's still within the rating period. So you've got to kind of give that back to the employee. And the idea of having them do a self-review, what I always did with my employees is before we sat down for the annual review, and by the way, you guys, I do believe in quarterly reviews. I think it's really important. They only last 20 minutes. I'm just listening. They're telling me where they're at. They set the time on my calendar. They set the agenda for the meeting. My job is to listen and coach. But the reality is I would do like a prep meeting with the employee. I wanted to hear from them. Tell me about your self-evaluation. Tell me about your achievements and your accomplishments that saved time, that increased customer satisfaction, that increased revenue, that decreased costs, whatever it happened to be. Why is the organization a better place for your having been here? And I want to kind of tease that out of them. And that is not the place for the yes, but. This is just listen. I just want to hear where they're at. I want them to do their very best presentation. And the logic there is I'm trying to teach them to become stronger leaders. I'm paying it forward by giving away what I'm kind of good at, which is I can do this for myself. I like spreadsheets. I like showing what my achievements were. I like quantifying my accomplishments. Most people don't. Even at the hourly level, though, the non-exempt people out there, they can do this too. You will be surprised if you give them that opportunity, if you make the space for them to put their best foot forward in their annual review preparation, you get some really, really good stuff. The managers will say, yeah, but Paul, they're going to think they're the best thing since sliced bread. I think they're a meatball. And I'm like, okay, wait, hang on. This could raise a difference in perception, but that gives you reason to talk about, Paul, I appreciate all this stuff. There are not necessarily in this meeting, but there are certain things that I am concerned about or that I think you really want to focus on going forward. But put it out there. Let's talk about it. I'm not going to engage in a paper chase where I don't ask them the feedback. I put mine down. They write a rebuttal. I write a rebuttal to their rebuttal. They write a rebuttal to my rebuttal. This is noise. This is drama. We have to treat them like adults. We've got to sit there. We've got to listen. I've always said, listen with your eyes and with your heart in addition to your ears. Okay. It's like, listen, not to overcome what they're about to say, but listen to it from their point of view. Most people will be harder on themselves than you would ever be. That's what my experience tells me. But people think that, well, people are going to have a distorted view and then I'm going to have to overcome the fact that they think they're so great. And yeah, sometimes it'll come down to that too. But the truth of the matter is when you treat people with this kind of respect and you give them this level of independence, so to speak, they're usually not going to try and snow you. They'll respect the fact that their boss is asking them for that improvement. And more often than not, in my experience, it's like, Paul, there's a couple of mea culpas here where I know I need to get better. That's where I need your help. That's kind of where I would expect it to go. You'll be surprised that people will be harder on themselves than normally you would be on them. So, Jeremy, that's my initial thought on that. But that's what I was trying to get to in the book. It's like, it's not a once a year for an hour or a half hour. It really is developmental. It's meant to have touch points. So I follow the New York Stock Exchange, right? Quarterly reports, the 10Qs that lead to the annual report, the 10K, but give them the chance to put their best foot forward. That's what career and professional development is all about.
And Paul, you mentioned this over time development. You also mentioned a couple of times this frame of reference. And I've got to add the other parts that I had highlighted in blue about this yardstick, which is the individual development plan. And I'll read kind of verbatim here. Should be kept front and center in the manager's and an employee's binder or notebook to always remind, or of course, I know Alexander's going to say it should be on some kind of, not physical, it's got to be some kind of tech thing that's easier. So Alexander, I want to hear your tools that can be used for this, but so that they can always remind themselves and think of new and faster ways to getting there. Okay, that's development. And Paul continues in his book, turn it around for a moment. You're the supervisor because we were looking at the employee's point of view. Again, keep this front and center. It's a constant reminder of an agreement. And Tom and audience, we've talked about communication pledge / psychological agreements, agreements that we've made and the goals that you can help your team members reach. I'm going to read this verbatim because I love it and I love how it ends. Simply put, you are both focused, bonded, and working together towards a common goal, and your compact or pledge to one another sits front and center in both of your binders so it can be referred to often. Congratulations, you just learned how to maximize an incredibly simple tool that allows you both to excel in your respective careers while benefiting your company tremendously. And I think the key there is incredibly simple tool. Because it is, and that creates a draw to something rather than a push to something.
Yeah, and I'll agree with Alexander. I'm fine if you want to put it on some kind of tech. But here's the scoop, you guys. For me, if you can put it on the back of an envelope, on the back of a napkin, that's all you need. Because a lot of this stuff really is that simple. Companies make the mistake when they do the annual review, when they do it once a year, they spend 80%+ talking about the person's past, right? We've talked about this on that last workshop, Jeremy, on the last podcast. They're talking about their past, making people truthfully feel kind of judged. And you're lucky if you get 10 to 20% to talk about your future. And even if you do, and even if you commit to certain goals, that piece of paper then goes in a personnel file. Nobody talks about it again. The reality is the world is changing so quickly in this post-pandemic reintegration phase that we're in. The reality becomes that you really can't even set an annual goal. You have an annual overarching goal, but you might reach that goal in 2 weeks or 2 months. But that means that at the end of that quarter, you need to ratchet it up. And you're looking at really amending these goals on a quarterly basis as you move forward. And I think that's a very healthy rhythm, because to sit back and say, I have one goal or I have three goals for the entire year. I mean, you're either making them so 30,000 footish that they don't really mean anything. I'm going to make employees happier here at work. That doesn't mean anything. But they've got to be quantifiable, right? They've got to be measurable. And when you hit that measurement, that's something we're celebrating. And then there's more. And what next? As an executive coach, that's always the question. And what else? Or and what next that you're asking for? So where do they want to take it? And it's a matter of degree. It's not a matter of checking a box anymore, but you got to keep it front and center. That is something when you're talking to people in a one-on-one monthly meeting or in a quarterly meeting. Yeah, that's part of your foundational document, because that's how you measure things. What gets measured gets managed. But if you forget about it and you just put it on the side and don't look at it again for a year, then it is just a paper chase. Make it real. Employee engagement is all about, again, my relationship with my boss and my being in a learning curve. Those are your two things. This is not hard. As long as employees feel like they've got a great relationship with the boss has their back, they feel like they're trusted and respected, they're going to thrive. It's that boss's caring and their character. That's it. If I've got that, I don't have to do much else. But especially coming out of COVID, where people felt like they were treading water career-wise for the last 2-3 years, they want to add muscle. They want to learn their craft, learn their trade. That's what real-time feedback is all about. And this gives you the opportunity between the real-time feedback and these little quarterly captions to talk about what their overarching trajectory is looking like, how they want to course correct, where they can use your help, where they want more training. That's the opportunity for them to soar and for you to know how to build better leadership teams as the manager.
Right, well, thank you very much for that. And I think we should get to some of these hands up, because people have been waiting. And Paul, I could just have a conversation with you for the next 45 minutes, but let's go to Lee.
Oh, man. Well, as usual, so many things to unpack. You know, first, Tom, I understand where your journey as a communication professional started. I see why you wanted to become an expert in that. You know, and I'm going to surprise you for a second here, Tom. This is something the Navy actually did right. I know. I'm glad you were sitting down. When they, even though, we know all the problems with the annual thing and comparing it to people who do different jobs and all that kind of stuff. But one thing they do correct is you're expected to provide input. Usually you get what's called a brag sheet, where you go and you put in all the wonderful things that you did over the past year and you give that to your supervisor, because your supervisor may have, 100 people, 200 people that they're doing evaluations for. They don't necessarily know what you did down to a proper level. So, you know, being able to provide that information. And then once you get more senior, you actually provide a draft write-up for the narrative part of your thing. And then your supervisor goes, yeah. And so they use that as the basis. So I think that was one of the few things that they did right in that process. I do want to say that organizations are going to be a big impediment with this, as we know. But for any of you listening, as a supervisor, as a leader, as a manager, you can implement these things on your own. You know, for your people, you can do quarterly reviews and all that kind of stuff and roll it up into that annual paper trail that the company does. I tell my people regularly when something cool happens that write it down, make sure, because a year from now, you're not going to remember that. And I'm not going to remember that. And I try to keep notes, but I'm still going to miss stuff. And when something goes awry, instead of just blasting them for it, I go, okay, it happens. What did we learn? What did you learn from this to make it happen differently next time? And, because if you give a safe space for your people to fail quickly and fail safely and then learn from that, well, then they fail less, at least not in the same ways. So that's just one way. And there's a trust building here, because most people have had, experiences like what you described, where it's an us against them, and it's, you know, adversarial, it's not a positive thing, and oh man, I gotta go get my review, and oh boy. And but so you're gonna have to work on that as a leader. I mean, I know in with my current team, there were times where I was like, hey, you know, tell me about that, and they're like, they're waiting for the shoe to drop. Am I setting them up? It's like, no, that's not how I operate. And it takes a while for them to understand that you're being genuine, that you really are interested in the answer, that you really are concerned with their performance and their future. And, you know, I tell people all the time, I know you're not going to stay here forever, and that'll suck for me, but I'll celebrate for you. What can we do to make that a good thing? And, you know, what can we do to make you pass, you know, go right on past where I am? What can we do to help you get there? And, you know, and people are taken aback. I had somebody, I've never had anybody, you know, a supervisor tell me that before. I'm like, well, even your supervisors were wrong. Okay. I'm just going to put that up. And then just one last thing for those of you listening to the podcast, if you have the opportunity to join us live, the chat that you don't see is full of gems, you know, my attempts at levity notwithstanding, there is some great stuff in the chat. So, and with that, I'll hand it back to you, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you for that, Lee. And Paul, jump in anytime you want if you know, hear something from one of the speakers that you want to comment on. Natasha, great to see you back here again. Let's go to you.
Hi, everyone. And Lee, I'm just going to go ahead and add a plus one to what you said about Paul and being a communications person. There are so many points that I wanted to jump on, and I don't even know where to begin, but I guess I'm going to start with, you know, I love the mention, Paul, of work agreements, because as we know, work agreements, it will vary and look differently by organizations and based on the organization's culture, right? I believe it was you, Jeremy, who brought up the parent analogy. And contextually, here in America, for American-born, maybe depending on the culture, yes, it makes sense that, hey, parents, we want to include our children in that conversation. But from a cultural perspective, myself being Black and from a little country known as Haiti, I don't think I would be present with any of you today if I were to dare tell my parents, and here is how I feel, or here, you know, here is my input. RIP to the me that would have done that, but thankfully I was too smart not to, right? And I think that that notion also carries over into the workplace, because the workplace is a melting pot of diverse group of individuals by race, origin, place of origin, et cetera. And based on the culture of the manager, in addition to the culture of the organization, that impacts how these performances take place. And I remember once in a lifetime that was not too far from today, going through a performance review with a Black woman who looks like me and handed me my performance review. And what I did at that point was thank them for, you know, the performance review and their comments, and inform them that I would like to take a few days to review this and come back to you with clarifying questions. So that was my approach of taking control of my performance review and being able to make it a dynamic interaction, because this person's expectation was that, and once it was given to me, I needed to sign and accept it. That was not the case. In my case, it was, can you give me an example or 2 to 3 examples of said statement? Because I knew the manager could not. And so towards the end of when I responded to the handbook and said, based on X, Y, and Z, I would like for this either to be tossed aside or edited. Most employees are not told that they can, that the performance process is a dynamic process, right? And most organizations do not do so, because in my lifetime outside of a 9-to-5, I also have my own consulting agency where I support my own consulting practice, where I support employees who come to me all the time with their performance reviews. And, you know, we go over them. And once an employee was literally told, you don't have the right to respond to this. We're telling you what you need to do. And when I coached the employee to go to HR and how to approach that conversation, the HR representative specifically told them, based on your manager's culture, they tend to be all about business and less about people. And that type of management style is necessary in the workplace because it gets stuff done. And so I say this to say that, you know, we really need to think about it when we talk about, you know, the work agreements, the cultures, and also how, you know, the rights of employees, that they have the opportunity to be able to respond to these type of things. And for the most part, it goes back to the training of managers and in many instances, the training of HR representatives, because HR, as we look at it, is looking less and less about the people and more about the data, the performance, the KPIs. And I guess that is why people like the group that is here today or listening to us today is needed in organizations, to remind organizations that it truly is about the people, because the people are the ones performing to meet those KPIs. And when you treat your people like people, your people will make the ends meet. And so I think that that was a little bit about my contribution for today's talk. And then also, I guess, going back to the initial question that was asked, how the performance review impacts the memory. I don't necessarily think that it is how the question should be how the performance review impacts the memory, but what the person remembers from the experience of the performance review. And what they remember would either be, I do not matter, all they care about is the bottom line, and I do not have a voice, to list a few. And I think that more thought needs to be placed into, and how do our people experience this performance review? And we've said this often times before, that the performance review should not be a 1 year around thing. Let's make it quarterly, as you said. Let's make it a dynamic weekly or as things present discussion.
Thank you very much for that, Natasha. Linda Ann will come to you in a second, but Paula, I do want to come back to you because I think what Natasha has expressed is the pretty common experience that most employees have. So how do you, when you're working with organizations, transition them from that notion of what a performance review is to this new vision, which actually is beneficial?
I think you need to talk about it. I think we need to sit around the campfire and literally take the time to educate the managers on what the best practices are. Natasha, to your point, I agree. A lot of this is cultural. You know, in the United States, they do certain things that in other nations, they don't. And there are more introverts, extroverts, or different. There's all these things across the spectrum when you're dealing with human beings to try and figure out what's going to work for most. What we're trying to do with the self-evaluation is build a system that encourages input upward before the manager actually shares input with, here's how you did on your review, right? Give that employee a chance to invest in their own career and professional development. It's that simple. Yeah, some managers out there believe that you have to be feared to be effective. I think that's a bunch of baloney, but some people believe that, right? Some people believe you should never recognize people because it'll go to their head and make them want more money. That's silly. Recognition is free. It's the psychic income that keeps people, keeps their tails wagging, keeps them coming back to work every day. But when you combine the fact that, yeah, there's this tool called a self-evaluation tool, which you can do on the back of a napkin, but give your employees the opportunity. I think, Lee, you called it like a brag sheet in the Navy, right? Give them a chance to talk about what those achievements were, those accomplishments, what they've done in terms of exemplary effort, may not have resulted in anything, but man, they really tried. Give them a chance to shine, because ultimately the bottom line, I think where we're trying to go with this stuff is, how do you help people build their self-confidence? If you're a leader who comes from fear, you're not going to make them self-confident. You're going to make them afraid. And in an environment where all the CEOs seem to want innovation and creativity as one of their top five drivers in leadership, you're not going to have a lot of innovation when people are afraid of making a mistake. They have to be able to make smart mistakes. Hopefully, you know, they're coming to you and sharing things with you before they're going out there on a limb so that nothing hits the fan where you've got to duck. But the reality is you've got to talk about this because you can change the culture. And I'm not saying that one meeting with Paul Falcone in the training room is going to change everybody's heart. There's still going to be some people that are fiercely resistant. I'm the manager. I judge them. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Those people are going to take a little bit longer. But I think what you're going to find, or at least what I found, is that most managers like this. You'll get the heads going up and down. I ask them to filter through how they would have liked to have been on the receiving end of this as employees, or how would they feel about it now as employees? Do they think this is something worth doing? Usually the answer to that by the majority is yes. So you can change the culture. It's the structure, it's the communication, it's the training, it's the sitting around the campfire and sharing the wisdom, passing it down from the elders to the newer gen. And I think that really is going to make a difference. There will be those stubborn holdouts who may have to self-select out of the organization because they don't like the direction, the new direction the company is going in since Paul Falcone got here. But that's a lot of drama. You're not going to see that much. Lee, I'm going to guess, based on what you said in terms of telling employees on your team, you guys, I want for you what you want for you, not I want for you what I want for me through you, right? How do I help you get ahead in your career here or elsewhere? You've probably had very little turnover on your team or in your teams. Because when people have that kind of leadership, they ain't going nowhere. Not for 20%. That's not enough. After taxes, that's not going to buy me a happy meal at McDonald's. But boy, I love working for Lee. He gets me. He trusts me. He makes me feel like my opinion matters. He brings out the best in me. He challenges me to do things I don't even think I'm ready for. He seems to have more faith in me than I have in myself. When you start describing your leader that way, you're not going anywhere. And that's why you have that kind of stability. I'm lucky. I've had that kind of stability in my teams as well. But they've got to know that you care. And it all comes down to character and caring. That's it. We're so busy chasing our tails, trying to do. The reality is it's just a matter of who you be, who you are. It's the beingness that's so important. The best boss you've ever had is usually couched in terms of their beingness. It's the way they cared. It's the fact that their character, they trusted you. They respected you. They let you do your best work every day with peace of mind. That's it. This ain't rocket science, but that's really where we need to get. And that's what we on this call and everybody listening in, that's where we need to drive this. Because in this new economy, post-COVID economy, where things are changing so quickly, we need agility. We need people who can adapt. We need people who can come up with innovative ideas. That doesn't come from fear. That comes from trust and self-confidence.
That should be a sound clip we put all over the internet. Thank you very much for that, Paul. Linda Ann, we're going to go to you. And then Nick, we're going to go pop over to you. Linda Ann.
So this is one of my favorite topics. And when I work with organizations, this is one of the key things that I think is one of the most important foundations in making sure that you have productive, happy employees. And I was just at a client's, and I've been instituting their performance review process, right? It's a small company. And I was helping educate them, doing individual meetings, but I felt like there wasn't enough structure and understanding of the process and the components of that. So I gave every one of them a binder with tabs that started with the strategic goals, the career plan. There's a document that we're going through their career life goals and making sure that that's really clear to them, their performance reviews, the self-review, job descriptions. We do what's your current job description, what's your next job description, their updated resume, and their annual accomplishments all in one place for them to keep track of. They can go to their meeting. It's all cohesive. And I don't know how a supervisor of any kind can do a good performance review without that self-review first. And when I train leaders, they are not to do the performance review until they've received that copy of the self-review first and really looked at it and integrated that thought process into their own performance review. And I have a lot of feedback in that self-review on, so what do you like best? What's your biggest accomplishment? What are you looking to, what's a skill set that we're not aware of that you can contribute? All of those kinds of things where they really see how they can be integrated into the organization well. I think the key piece for leaders that are based on fear is we need to educate them on the fact that their success is dependent on the success of their employees and how well they perform. And so to really create that process for this is a team effort, right? And align it with the goals and so forth. So I have them, like I have one person who I need to, who isn't doing exactly what they need to do as far as the reviews, but the values of the organization are quality and communication. So if this is going back to the actual values, we keep going back to how is what you're doing really supporting those values? And that's then not a judgment on my part then. It's we need to make sure that we're executing this in the plan that we agreed to and everything's aligned together. So that's my very initial piece of feedback.
Well, thank you very much for that. Linda and Nick, over to you.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, you know, continuation of last week's conversation. And we talk about, you know, the employee speaking up, and everybody seems to have more examples of that going wrong than that going right. And it just makes me, you know, wonder, how do you carry on the day-to-day relationship with people who, you know, manage like this? Because whether it's happening yearly, quarterly, it really is happening every day. It's the interactions that you have on a regular basis with your manager that build to this, you know, conversation. We talk about what happened. And I love what Paul says about, you know, keep it simple. It's not rocket science. We talk about trying to put bells and whistles and put it in technology, but bad programming on good technology is still bad programming. And so I think that's, you know, as much as, yes, we can streamline good processes once they're there, we have to look at the central philosophy of why are we doing the performance review? What are we building into it? Is it, you know, is it forward facing? Is it rear facing? And even just the communication within. I put on my notes here, you know, fact and follow up. If we can take some of the, you know, the emotion out of it and say, this happened. Can you tell me what happened? Why did you miss that deadline? What was going on? You know, get curious and give somebody a chance to defend themselves and tell the story from their perspective while you tell it from yours. And hopefully you can meet in the middle and say, well, this is what we're going with going forward. You know, and the old psychological line is past behavior is the best predictor of future behavior. And that's why I think some of these get so rear facing. But if you're talking about improvement and development, okay, this did happen. How can we change the situation if it comes up again in the future?
Thank you very much for that, Nick. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, it's a two-way relationship between you and your supervisor. And it's interesting when you go to talk to your supervisor and their body language changes, their body straightens and tightens, and the tone of their voice goes up about two or three tones. Not a good start to a meeting. Dr. Matthew, let's go to you.
So there's a lot of good commentary around what employee involvement could look like and why leaders should do that. I try to avoid the word should, but it'll work here. Overall, it's encouraging a participative design in their performance review process, not just the one time a year, but throughout their entire career development. And like Paul said, it's building cultures, cultures that embrace leading and learning versus managing and miscalculation. Where did we mess up here? Let's focus on the positive as well. And let's, as Nick just brilliantly pointed out, okay, we made a mistake here, but what can we learn from it? And how can we avoid that as we continue to move forward? To the managers or leaders that are kind of stuck in that middle area of, this sounds great. I want to do this. My employees would want this, but my managers, my leaders want the other way. They embrace me and they encourage me to go this other way. Is it, you know, for those managers, is it possible in every organization or every situation? Of course not. A notorious answer in IO is it depends. So sure, there's some tasks, things that are very important. They're fixed. They're not really negotiable. But then there are other things that can be approached a little bit differently. They can have that flexibility. If your organization is saying, here's how you need to do the performance reviews, and then your performance review in return is focused on how well you do those assigned tasks, you might be kind of stuck. For example, if the employee reviews, it's a very rigid structure and you're going, how can I embrace and integrate some of these other factors? What might it look like to bring both pieces still together and still meet the requirement that I'm held to, but also embracing the desired piece that I want and that I know my people would want. And I'd contend that over time, the results that you and your team will get from the from that adapted and changed employee performance process, that's going to start getting attention. And whether that's through increased retention or attraction, employees all of a sudden are flocking to your team or your department. They're going, I want to go work for Tom. I really want to be a part of his team. Performance, development, whatever it is, higher ups are going to start noticing. And they're going to start, all of a sudden, you're going to have questions coming to you going, what are you doing differently? And that's going to give you an opportunity to empower that change in other areas of the organization, including the employees in the process and the performance review throughout the year. It's more than just completing some arbitrary task. It's about empowering them in their development. And to what Paul shared earlier, give people the chance to invest in their career and in their future. I have a question for you, Paul. I actually, after our last conversation, I reached out to a friend and former colleague who I know he has copies of your book. His organization gives them, encourages their leadership teams to read your stuff. And he was very familiar with it. He was asking, one of the questions that came up when he and I were talking was, when managers and leaders try to encourage their employees to be engaged in this process, not always their feedback for those evaluations, the employee's feedback is not always constructive. Sometimes it's very defensive, or it's focused specifically on this one, you know, weakness or this one challenge, or how. So the question that he asked was, how do you encourage and how do you recommend approaching employees and showing them here's a great way to do this? And it doesn't have to be a defensive battle. It can be a positive, embracing conversation. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that for him.
Matthew, you bring up a really, really good point, but there's a training element that needs to go into this too. When you talked about just now, the culture of the organization, this idea of you're going to start seeing results. It's going to take some time. This doesn't happen in a one-hour training session. It needs to be ongoing, and the employees need to know that it's not the HR idea du jour, that this is really important to you. That's the whole idea of the character and the caring, right? You sit with your employees around the campfire, it's called a staff meeting, and you talk about, you guys, I want to tell you how we want to move in a different direction and what this is going to look like. And what I would expect to hear, and what I would be saying to my boss when I do the same kind of meeting as an employee when I'm feeding the information upward. But how I want you to think about it is, how do you focus on your own career and professional development? And what can I do as almost like a mentor and a coach to help you get where you want to get? And I'm going to ask you to talk about your achievements, your accomplishments, your extraordinary efforts that may not have resulted in anything, but things where you really felt like you went above and beyond. I want you to talk about how you made the company a better place. I want to talk about what people say when you walk out the elevator. What's that 30-second pitch? What's that brand that you have? That's the way I want you to think about this meeting. I know we've never done this before. I know it sounds a little bit kind of like, but I've been reading up on this and I'm studying this, and I think it really, really is going to make a difference. And I think even if the rest of the company isn't doing it, in our department, we can do it. And I think we're going to be able to show some really strong results. So I want you to feel committed to this. I want you to feel comfortable to the degree that you are. But I also want this to develop over time. The first meeting that we have may feel a little bit awkward. You're getting your traction, you're getting your footing, but we're going to do more of these. I'm hoping to do this on a quarterly basis, but I really want you to start thinking in terms of achievements and accomplishments, and why is the organization better? How are you increasing the customer satisfaction? What are you doing that people would say, wow, that's agility, he's really good or she's really good at this, and changing and becoming a first adapter of new tech, whatever it happens to be. What are those values? And the only other thing I'd say on this, and I think this is important, Matthew, I call it leaders, values-based leadership. The idea of living your values as a leader in the workplace is a very, very healthy thing. And I learned this from Mark Taylor, who was the general manager of Nickelodeon, who was a genius. He was like a legend in his day at the animation studio. And Mark would sit with the new hires in orientation. Every 2 weeks we had new hire orientation. Mark was there for at least an hour. And he'd tell them about the history of the studio, and he'd tell them about what we value most. And he would say, you guys, I want to tell you what my grade 8 values are. And my first value is always have one another's back and bring out the best in everybody you work with. And then he'd go through his 8 and he would talk about that. And then he would say, I encourage you to think about your own values and share them with your manager. Now, that was all done on a Monday. On Wednesday, he would have a follow-up meeting for everyone who was in a leadership capacity. And he would bring them into his office and he would say, okay, you guys, we want to talk about your expectations of thriving here are really high, and they should be. And we want you to think about this in terms of a long-term career path. But I hold you to a higher level of accountability because you're shepherds of the people who experience this culture. We have a very special culture here, and you're all responsible for perpetuating it just like I am. This idea of sitting around the campfire, sharing these values, making yourself a little vulnerable in a healthy sense to kind of talk about, you know, where you've learned, where you've made mistakes, what you've come to realize. And sharing that gives everyone a sense of self-assuredness. They know where they fit. They know what they're expected to do. Again, not everyone will be able to take to it. Not everyone trusts in 10 minutes. They can't turn it around. They need to see it over a couple of months. Some people over a couple of years. Some people will take to their grave that they will not trust anybody else. I don't know. I can't do this for every human being, but I can make it my brand and I can make it my belief. And to that degree, Matthew, when people see that you're living those values, maybe they're not ready for the first round, but by the third round, by six months from now, they're going to be good at this. But you're changing the culture. Give them a little space to make the time for them when the timing is right, but set the right in certain circumstances where they can motivate themselves and they can feel more like they can do their best work every day. That, again, builds their self-confidence. That's how you're going to get the best performance out of your employees. So long answer to a short question, but I hope that kind of paints the picture of where I would go with this one, because it's a great question, but I also think it's a realistic answer that may take some time in certain circumstances.
Paul, I have to ask you, you've written a number of really great books. We could have the Paul Fulcombe Library, but especially with your background, have you ever done and, turned your information into a documentary, into the film process? Because I can get people to watch a film much easier than to read a book.
Tom, we're going to have to talk afterwards. I should know. I never thought of it, but I think it's a great idea. I'm all ears. Well, the funny thing is, it's like, okay, when Linda Ann, you were talking about what you do for your client, right? And you build this whole little notebook of the whole performance appraisal process, starting at the strategic and taking them through resumes, job descriptions, achievements, self-reviews, publish that. That would be something that I think would get a lot of traction out there because it's still so nebulous. I'll take you back to Lee, what you said about when you were in the Navy, what they're doing right is with these brag sheets. We have to remember something, you guys, truly performance reviews started in World War I. That's about when they came. That's when they started to make their scene, and they were introduced in the United States military, and they were used to deselect people who were not ready for service for whatever reason. So they introduced performance reviews to screen out people who couldn't serve in the military. I hate to say it, it's 100 years later. There's still that negative perception of performance reviews that they give bad feedback, that they're used to confirm your weaknesses. The truth of the matter is, as a leader, you're going to get a lot more out of managing people's strengths than trying to shore up their weaknesses. But you're not necessarily going to know how to do that unless you're sitting with them and finding out really what their career drivers are and where their interests lie. That's, once you know that, you can work with them on setting goals. You can work with them on delegating more effectively. Again, not that hard, but we've got to get out of our minds because we tell ourselves a lot of narratives that are silly about, I need to be feared to be respected and be effective. People need to be afraid of me. I can't trust people to give feedback on their own careers because they're going to all say they're the best thing since sliced bread. That's not my experience. And again, I've done this across healthcare, biotech. I've done it in entertainment. I've done it in financial services. Union, non-union, hourly, professional. People are usually harder on themselves. You've got to give them that opportunity, but they've got to feel safe doing so.
Thank you very much for that. We've got four speakers left and we're getting a little short on time. We'll try to get to all of you, but I would just ask you to be a little succinct in your questions and your comments. Shauna, let's go to you. Welcome to Work Cookie.
Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, so I'm going to dive right in because I do want to touch on a few different things because this has been amazing. Paul, thank you so much for affirming the campfire kind of like analogy and framework that I always like to kind of give for upward feedback. To add on to what Natasha was kind of saying, that I was listening to an IO psychologist earlier this week who kind of presented work being equal to like a family type of thing and how that is not a great analogy for work because so many families have different levels of dysfunction in them. So there's a level of like accepting that dysfunction. But I think some of the parenting examples really boil it down and resonate with people because it comes from a place of teaching and learning. So adding on to that, the teaching employees like a new and better way of interactions and communicating in this like unfamiliar space, you know, it's not been adjusted for 100-something years. So this is still an unfamiliar space. And so Paul, to your comment that it takes time. I think another thing, another article I had read about regulative maintenance. So that's basically employees using avoidance to cope with unwanted relationships at work, relationships that are uncomfortable, abusive supervision, clashing personalities, things like that. So I'll drop that into the comment section for you guys to kind of like look at. But I think ultimately it really does boil down to teaching and imparting knowledge to that, to this new workforce and all of the human factors that are adding into that.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's great, Shauna.
Everyone get Paul's books and then hire yourself an IO psychologist. Alexander, let's go to you.
Hey guys. All right. So this week I actually had a brunch with some other chief information officers. One was of a major metropolitan city. And they brought up something that I thought was very interesting because it kind of tied in with performance reviews and getting employees to be able to do some of the things. If Jeremy, yes, perfect. So on the IT eras part for the enterprise IT, what we were talking about was shadow IT. And this is essentially where employees are downloading and installing either software or using tools that are online SaaS-based that haven't been approved yet. And when we were talking about this, they were talking about managers not being able to get them in. One CIO was from an oil company. The parent oil company provides IT for what are essentially subsidiaries underneath. And so he was making essentially the CEOs of those companies sign retainers that if they purchased any type of unauthorized software, it wasn't going to be refunded. It was out of their own pocketbook. And that was how they were trying to curtail this. And so we kind of have the most basic level IT of the enterprise era is going up each one. This was back in 2018, still quite relevant, though, unfortunately, about 70% of organizations are still at that first basic level, really struggling with shadow IT. But when I asked the questions about, well, how often do you have performance reviews? It was once a year for the performance reviews. And so there wasn't an ability really or a system set up in the maturity of the organizations to have these conversations with the employees about why are these types of shadow IT software risky to the businesses and how can we start to have those conversations to guide the employees to understand, hey, this is something that's really puts our business at harm. How do we keep coaching you, getting you on track with it? And that's just one of those areas where it's not just about almost the performance of just the exact managers, but it really goes across the whole organization as the entire organization matures and being able to really have other departments work with each other and be able to get all levels of the organization on par to doing the best the business can. That's all I had for us.
Tom, over to you.
Oh, sorry, Linda Ann, over to you.
I was almost going to just jump in anyway. I just want to make 2 points. And that's one is, I think leaders need to understand that doing this really well is their job. They accepted that responsibility when they accepted the role of supervision. And so this is spending, it's not doing reviews, is not just this, you know, total 5 hours that you put in per year. This is an ongoing part of your job description and job to do this really well. And one of the things that I have included in the review document that the leader completes is once they go through the goals and expectations and all those kinds of things, they need to identify what they are going to do to facilitate that person's success. So in other words, I can tell you I want you to do X, Y, and Z, but what am I committing to facilitate that progress? And then those things that are identified on that particular performance review, they are all to be transferred to the reviewers performance review and expectations so that they are now responsible for following through on that commitment.
Thank you very much for that, Linda Ann. Imani, over to you.
Thank you. So everything has almost been said, you know, but I just wanted to kind of come in with a few, you know, points.
just to talk about, or even ask you guys if you've seen people winning lottos, winning money, but then they get to lose it all within 2 years. It has all gone and they have nothing left to even show that they ever won any money. So in as much as we're talking about all these performance reviews and stuff, I just wanted to just say that somebody talked about, you know, training and teaching. And I feel like leaders feel like only employees should be the ones to be able to receive, but they're also not trained enough to be able to be in that position of receiving as well. Sometimes they get into, I'll say what I usually say, get into your emotions and let their ego, you know, come, you know, into the whole equation because they have the title. And I've always said the title always makes us feel so much entitled, you know, to certain respect, even without us, you know, giving it out there. So I think in life, we have two things we pay for. You're either paying for it with your money or paying it for your time. So when we lower our gaze to understand that as leaders, that regardless of how much these employees are not directly bringing money to this organization, they're paying it with their time, we will know and have value for these people. And also speaking from the part of being empathetic, you're putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. So why are you trying to be empathetic and then also bring in an opinion of your own? You have to let these people speak and let you know what it is or how they really, you know, what is going on with an organization in a way that when you're being empathetic, you're not just listening and then be like, oh, but also this is this and this is that. You fully have to just like keep quiet and let, you know, employees give you the feedback. And sometimes when somebody overvents, they eventually burn out. One, when they burn out, they will either get to realize what they're doing wrong or they will start to feel understood. When you keep quiet long enough to listen to someone, they will start to feel understood. Then they will open up and be willing to listen to you, or even they will be able to hold themselves accountable with your presence or without your presence. I'll tie this to my where I come from in my culture. And I remember I mentioned in the comment down there, I say gentle parenting. Gentle parenting, these people had 1,000 ways of telling us they loved us. And one of it, I'll tie it also to what Paul speaks about, you know, the campfires, because I remember I talked about the campfires here as a point within my culture when we're talking about the storytelling topic here on this podcast. So they had 1,000 ways of telling us they loved us. But when they came up and then they were being authoritative and told you, this is what I want you to do, you would do it. It doesn't even matter how much we say that, oh, I think whatever we said from the beginning that we have to, you know, act in that way. To me, the whole point of parenting that I remember is they had 1,000 ways of telling us they loved us. They showed us through different ways. They were kind of being empathetic with us. But then at the same time, they will come up with something is wrong. They'll tell you, this is not what I want you to do. This is what I want you to do. And with no doubt, with their presence or without their presence, you will be doing that. So all I'm just saying, we are all talking about these things of how a leader should be, but if they're not even willing to be receiving, if they're not trained to be empathetic, to even have the emotional intelligence of de-associating and understanding where their emotions are or how they should be, you know, treating themselves as an example towards these employees, then we are all failing at this. We're going to say as much as we're going to say, but then leaders will just end up being performative leaders if they're also not ready and have the emotional intelligence to be able to know they should be in tune with their own, you know, emotions, to understand that when an employee is just trying to raise a point, they're not trying to, you know, to ruin on your parade or something, but they're just trying to, you know, raise a point to just make, you know, harmony in working together within the organization. So my point is, in as much as we're doing all this training needs to be done, each one of us needs to be accountable and build, I always say, our emotional intelligence will be in good positions to be to receive information, to receive criticisms without taking it so personal, so that we can all contribute to the value for the time that employees put into organizations, then value for the money that, you know, our employers, you know, pay us as salary, and then also value for our clients, you know, for their money that they really put into organization. Because once you really, you know, once you really take care of your employees, they will take care of your, you know, your clients. Something that I say, our interactions generate emotions, and that's why we all have to pivot and know how to control them. And that's why I would love to really echo and just wanted to say with my two cents. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Manny. Always great insights from you. Well, thank you, Paul. This has been a great 2 weeks. You've brought some great understanding to us, and thank you for sharing your wisdom. You came as a guest. Please consider yourself family. Drop by anytime and join us. Are there any final words or thoughts you'd like to share?
No, I just want to say thanks, everybody. Tommy, you've been great. Jeremy, thank you for the invite. You guys are a lot of fun. You are changing the world. I think we all are. And the funny thing that I find is when we're in these kinds of settings, passing the wisdom on to ourselves, it's funny, you guys. It's the same messages in all the books. No matter which bestsellers you want to pick up off the shelf, the top 10, the top 100, no matter what language it's in, we're all trying to get towards the same place. There's a lot of opportunity now. There's so much change out there. Now's the chance to reinvent what we're doing. It's an exciting time. I'm glad to be part of it. I'm really glad to be part of this podcast and this community, this village. Thank you all for hosting me. It was really lovely.
Thank you very much. Jeremy, what's going on around CBOC?
Yeah, and also thank you, Paul. And we are looking forward to having Paul back. And it is exciting times. And those are fantastic words of wisdom. So our theme for next month is to be determined, but I do want to share this. So this is for May. We're getting so many events. So here's our event calendar. We have 18 just for April. So there is that view that you can look when you're getting your tickets, you can switch to calendar view and it goes all the way down here. And I don't know if we're just getting too crazy with the events, but people seem to like them and they seem to be helpful for our community. And we're looking to add at least 3 more per month pretty soon. So check out cboc.com/events. If you're listening to the podcast, these are open mic. Feel free to come. As Lee said, you can be involved in the chat. You can raise your hand and speak and interact. Thank you so much, everyone. Beautiful as always. I say that all the time because it is beautiful as always. Thank you, everyone. Counting out in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at cboc.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At cboc.com.